Hello, you're listening to Me and Paranormal You with your host, Ryan Singer. Because it's more fun to believe.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining me for another experience of Me and Paranormal You. Today's going to be a fun episode because we have Abigail Moss, healer and teacher of Mind Body Free, here today to have an expansive conversation. We'll see where it leads us. If you're a patron, you can kind of see, you can see the video. I'm seeing a Portland framed city map in the background. Is that where you're located?
No, I really love Portland though.
Oh, okay.
I'm in Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, Portland's a pretty cool city. Mm-hmm. the couple times I've been there, I've really enjoyed it. There's something fascinating about that whole just upper Pacific Northwest that is, you know, if part of it gives me the creeps when it comes to, like, you know, all the forest and the unknown things. And but there's a lot of there's some interesting things going on up there. But okay, so today we're going to chat about all kinds of stuff. I kind of want to get into maybe your journey, your background. You have a background in shamanic Chinese medicine. And I think you, you know, we can probably get into like future lives, past lives, channeling and all that kind of stuff as well. But first let's talk about, you know, who is Abigail as a little kid and, you know, what kind of inspired this journey that you're on?
Yeah, cool. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me here. I'll come back to the Pacific Northwest afterwards because it's amazing there. my journey has been good. This lifetime has been a good journey. growing up, I was kind of homeschooled and I was kind of like alone a lot of the time. So I had a lot of time to be with nature and be with myself. So it kind of gave me a lot of freedom to not get a lot of ideas about what life should be and what society is and all that. But yeah, I went through kind of an awakening journey in my late 20s, and I just kind of tuned into all the pain in the world, all the pain that's happening in the animal agriculture industry, with the environments, within all different cultures, all different people, pretty much just everywhere. And it was just a lot, and I didn't know what to do with it or how to handle it. So I went and I went to Peru. I heard about ayahuasca and I was like, wow, that is exactly what I need. I went to Peru. I did ayahuasca. That woke me up in a really powerful way, which is, but I'm not sure if your viewers know, but just for the record, it's a vine that the shamans work with down there. And it has very psychedelic properties that kind of wakes people up in a really big way. And so I did that and I came home and I just had all kinds of like emotional up and down and didn't know how to like ground myself or deal with my own shit. Everything had opened up and I could see so much, so many beautiful aspects of reality I couldn't see before, but now I just still didn't know how to handle myself. And so I went and did that shamanic Chinese medicine training. And that's really just given me the tools, the awareness and the grounding to kind of find this magic with my own consciousness, with my own breath, with my body, with my intention. And that's really how I navigate life today, is through working with these really ancient tools that cultures all around the world, in similar ways, used to connect with spirit, used to connect with themselves, used to connect with the earth. And it's this reawakening of those, this ability that we all have to do that. And so that's kind of my life today, is living that, teaching that, reminding myself of it whenever I need a reminder.
Which is
daily.
Which is daily, right? I mean, I'm not trying to speak as a healer, but I've been deep diving into crystal research a lot lately for a project I've been doing that I'm very excited about for early next year, for a phone app that I'm building. And the one thing that seems to be really resonating with me is something you touched on. It's mind, body, spirit, earth, right? Mm-hmm. And the grounding aspects. And until we're finding balance in all of those areas, it's, you know, it's kind of like it's like giving someone a tool and they have no idea. It's like the first time I looked at an espresso machine. I have no idea what this thing does or what buttons to push or how to use it or, you know, but when someone is, I guess, I don't know, maybe in tune or trained or taught how to use it, it could make something that could be very enjoyable or beneficial for someone. I mean, if they're into coffee. And it seems like you did the ayahuasca and then later you kind of learned how to, I don't know, would we call it integration?
Integration.
Yeah. Which I think is a big, which is something I wish I knew more about before I did DMT. Which I've only done once, but, you know, trying to flail around and figure out what just happened and how to integrate after an experience like that is difficult when you're flying blind.
Yeah, it is. And that's something that we don't really we haven't really prepared for in our culture. In other cultures around the world, India, like, oh, they're going through an awakening process. Okay, let them do their thing. Give them some time. They'll be fine. But we don't really talk about that here. There's just a few people that go and they access this. And then you come back and you want to talk about all the magic. And then people look at you like you have three heads. Yeah. And like, oh, I'm here, but I'm not really a part of this. And so it's, how do I integrate that world with this world? And yeah, and I kind of see it as a remembering, and I love your espresso analogy. Like, how does this thing work? How does life, the earth, how does that work? But it's a remembering how it works, because the earth made our body. There's consciousness in the earth. Our spirit comes here and has this physical experience. But a part of us remembers, because we're nature too. We're a part of ayahuasca, and ayahuasca is part of the earth. And it's just, I feel like, you know, the plant, she breaks open those blocks of that prevent us from remembering that, remembering who we are, which is multi-layered. There's so many aspects of us, but part of that is nature. And it's kind of funny to look at it, look at ourselves like we're the weird espresso machine. It's like, really? Yeah, I am that too. Where's my manual again?
And it's funny too, just from some of the books I've read from, what is the name of it? It's the something, the serpent, or I can't remember the name of it. It's about an anthropologist who studied, you know, the, South American cultures and ayahuasca and his experience with it and how it is giving information to the people who use it oftentimes and has been used for centuries in such a way. Where it's even breaking down to the point of, like, you know, it's showing you like what you are at your core. Like, it's like even showing representations of like what DNA strands, but in these symbolic, you know, as snakes intertwined and things like that. And which science then later discovers and then describes in the same way, essentially. And people are like, well, how can a plant can't talk to you? You know, that's the thing that, you know, the real materialistically minded, scientific leaning person would say, like, a plant is not communicating with you. And it's like, well, no, your hand communicates with you. If you've been, you know, hit by a hammer, it doesn't say, ouch, hey, I'm hurt, but it sends you that feeling, right? And it's communicating to you. I think much in the same way you said that we are part of this earth. And ayahuasca is part of us, and we are part of ayahuasca. So I think it's all the information is contained there within, kind of, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's all within. And it's that process of remembering, of accessing that part of ourself. And it's like we go through this veil of forgetting when we come into these bodies. And the journey is remembering that, oh, I'm a body. I live in a body that's part of Earth, but my spirit may not have come from there, but how do I live in connection with all of this as my most authentic self, which is ultimately free? And yeah, and it is that, like, an awakening process of realizing that, oh, everything is alive. And I like the analogy you use of your hand does communicate with you. It doesn't consciously speak with you for most people, unless you learn how to tune in with it that way. But it works through the cells, and it works through that awareness, and through our body. And it's there's like the conscious mind kind of taking a break, the judging, analytical ego aspect, and just allowing the rest of the self and the awareness to be present. And then it's that part of you that knows what to do, that part of you that remembers. And it's just allowing that part of us, our consciousness, that creates separation, which is super helpful for navigating the earth, because, you know, I need to know that I'm me and you're Ryan, and I will call myself Abby and Abigail, and I won't call you Ryan. I won't try to put food in your mouth. I'll put it in mine. We need some separation, but when it's out of balance, then we start seeing too much separation and forgetting that we were all connected in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if you know why it's so difficult and also hard to remember. And what I mean is, like, it's difficult to get to the place where you can even remember. And then it's hard to deal with remembering. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. I think the first part answers the second part. It's difficult to get there because we're not always ready to get there yet. We remember as much as we're ready to remember. And ayahuasca is like a catalyst in remembering. She helps to purge you of your trauma and your pain so that you can remember. Because all of those traumas, we're infinite beings. We've been around for a long time, you know, some of us hundreds of years, some of us thousands of years on earth. And that's a lot of stuff that you collect in that time. And so as you collect that stuff, it's like, okay, you know, there's something painful that happened. I mean, earth is still a pretty raw, young planet in a lot of ways. There's a lot of trauma that happens, you know, life eating life and destruction and rebirth. And that can be painful as a conscious being to experience. It can be painful to be in a body and feel all that. And so, you know, things happen. It comes back to us as we're ready. Just like, you know, complex PTSD, it comes back in, you know, visions or dreams, but it only happens as we're ready to do it.
Yeah. And it seems like the reaction or the way that most of us handle these things, the spectrum is so wide in the way it's dealt with. And I feel like we're seeing that now, specifically in the United States, in a big way because I truly believe at the end of the day, every single person alive just wants to be happy and feel safe. Absolutely. And everything that anyone does is to try to bring happiness or safety into their life, security, right? For them and theirs. Because they just, I guess it's just human nature to some degree to feel more connected to those that are in your immediate family or that you've bonded with very closely. Even though it was all random, could be selected in advance before we, you know, pick these bodies and et cetera, et cetera. And the way we go about trying to do that varies to such a large degree that it creates conflict between people who are like, your way of trying to feel happy and safe is interfering and impeding on my ability to feel happy and safe.
Yeah.
And when all that gets brought up to the surface, you know, I think, you know, people freak out, to a large degree. And I've never been a proponent of, you know, jumping on the mass hysteria bandwagon when it comes to speculation, especially with UFOs and when aliens arrive and everyone's going to freak out. And I'm like, well, everyone will freak out if that's what we keep saying is going to happen.
Exactly.
Because then everybody will be playing the part that has been written for them and that they've written for themselves. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't have to happen. Much in the same way, do you think we can rewrite the script for like the collective of humanity when it comes to remembering and being able to integrate in an easy way? If we start putting that out there.
Absolutely. I think we're writing the script all the time. We can write our own scripts, and then we're also co-creating with everybody else's. And so reality is how we define it and what we tell our minds, you know, the mind believes and we find evidence for. And if, you know, you can find heaven and hell on the same earth, it's just the reality, the frequency that you're choosing to experience it with. And that gets shifted with our thoughts and with our beliefs. So if I believe that the universe is a friendly place, I'm going to find that. If I believe that it's scary and I can't trust others, then I'm going to find separation and I'm going to be scared. Because that's one of the core wounds too, is that wound of separation. It's that, you know, the leaf doesn't live for very long off of the tree. And it's that fear that separates us, where it's, I need to feel safe. I need to feel safe because out there is not safe. When really, it's when I can feel connected, I can experience out there and I can be nourished by it. And I can have this reciprocal giving and receiving as part of it.
Yeah, yeah. I do. You know, that resonates with me. And Robert Anton Wilson wrote that the thinker thinks and the prover proves. And it's like what we look for, we find, right? Like you're saying. And, you know, if someone believes something wholeheartedly, you know, they're going to go out and find the evidence to show that they're right. What is it about just wanting to feel right all the time? That just it's like such a hinder. It hinders us so much. Like just to, is that like pride and stemming from ego, or what is that?
Yeah, I think there's a couple aspects to it. I think there's wanting to feel right, wanting to feel justified, wanting to feel like I'm doing the right thing. And it's in looking for it out there. So I need someone else to tell me I'm right because I don't know.
Ah, yes.
When I know my truth, it doesn't matter. I can just live in my truth. I don't need to prove that. I don't need anyone else to change themselves to make me happy, because I can find that inside myself.
Yeah. A lot of times people will say like, well, that person just doesn't care what anybody thinks. It's really amazing. And I guess what they're saying is that person has found their truth.
Yeah.
You know, in some ways it's like, you know, that, and I think we all admire those people, the people who are so comfortable being themselves that, you know, the opinions of the world don't matter. And, you know, if we all got to that place, I think we'd all just realize quite simply, like, oh, isn't it nice just to be able to be ourselves?
Yeah.
And everybody could just take a collective breath and like exhale and just be like, ah, okay, well, what do we do now? Well, I don't know. Let's feed everybody, you know, or, you know, when all that other stuff goes out the window, you know, trying to accumulate wealth or, you know, status or fame or whatever it is that people are obsessed with. And I'm not going to act like I haven't been obsessed with those things in my life. But when you can just get down to the bottom of it, I wonder, like, what are like, and it seems like I know what the answers are going to be potentially. But when it comes to just trying to get rid of all this garbage, right? And it's not to say that garbage can't be useful, because sometimes if you need a fire and there's some trash laying around, that's the fuel for your fire, right? But like when it comes to like taking out the trash, especially nowadays, I know a lot of people in this country are, you know, freaking out after a culmination of 4 years of anticipation and stress and anxiety and fear. Like the good ways to like really tap into it, into the calmness and the inner peace that you can find and reconnect to this source of truth and of who we are as infinite beings. What do you like to do as like the best way for you to kind of tune back in?
Yeah, I think it's a big question, because that's been a 7-year journey for me. there's tools and things you can do. I mean, a really simple way is to just go out and walk in nature. Before that, breathe. And when we get stressed, we stop breathing. And breath is, you know, it's what moves energy through our bodies. So the mind lives up in the head, and that's where all our thoughts are. And that's where the scary things come from. But really, when we're in our body, we can look around and the body knows, the body can feel, it can move through things. And the breath brings you into your body, so allowing yourself to breathe deeply and just take a moment and asking yourself when you're in that fear state, is there anything that I need to do right now? And if it's a no, then just breathe, because the mind makes up, it anticipates things it doesn't want to happen. And then it rehashes things it didn't like happening. And that's just a habit. And so it's just rewiring that habit. And this is part of our, you know, like our hardware too. Like we're biologically imprinted to live in tribal societies, to have, you know, my group, that's their group. And, you know, there's survival of the fittest. And, you know, all of that stuff's in nature. We see it in ourselves. We see it in animals. And then there's that pain that comes from that, of, you know, of warring, of fighting each other and of fighting ourselves. And it didn't start with humanity, but humanity is a species that's currently dealing with it in a really big way. And we get to be an aspect of nature healing itself and becoming aware of itself and evolving past that. And yeah, and to get back to yourself, I feel it's definitely a journey. It's the best journey you can take. And breath, movement, connecting with nature. And then some of the biggest pieces are releasing the trauma and the blocks, that the things that cover up our authentic self, cover us up from who we really are. Because we come into the world like this, you know, beautiful baby with these bright, shiny eyes in wonder and amazement. And everyone's like, wow, like that's just a beautiful being. It's beautiful to look at. And then we go through all of life and then forget our own magic, and we collect traumas and pains and beliefs of not feeling like we're good enough or not feeling like we're worthy or lovable or capable. And we just find these ways to need to prove that or prove otherwise. And it's just, it's painful because none of that stuff's true for anybody, because we're all these infinite, powerful, incredible beings at our core. And remembering that as a process of layer upon layer, accessing and releasing each trauma, breathing, moving it through your body. And that's what I guide people through, because it's really nice to have a guide. I've received lots of guidance of looking at what are the beliefs that were formed then. And it's the belief that holds the pain in place. So if I go around continuing to believe that I'm not a powerful, infinite being, it's like having a big thorn in my side, because it doesn't belong. And so it'll keep creating pain until I pull it out and find truth.
Yeah, I love that idea of just, you know, remembering I am a powerful, infinite being.
Yeah. You
know, like, and then, because when it's kind of like the big picture of everything, I like to think of it as like zooming out into my lazy boy in the universe and like looking down on just how small everything is. And like when I think like something is the biggest deal in the world, and when in reality it's not anywhere close to being the truth. You know, whether it could be, you know, and it could be anything about my career or my personal life, you know. And the one thing I always forget is that most people are so consumed with like all the things happening in our lives, which is, I guess, natural to be, you know, to some degree, to be consumed with, you know, the things that are happening to you. And it's like when they say, like, don't worry about like not feeling secure or something. If you're at a party, everyone else is just wondering what people are thinking about them. They're not looking at you and thinking about you the whole time, right? But if everybody had that thorn removed, then everybody could just have a good time at that party.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's a cool way to think about it. I just wonder, when it comes to like the differences you see even in the last decade, when it comes to the way people are thinking and talking about all this stuff, have you seen a change in the areas in which you live?
Yeah. And people waking up and talking about this stuff where they never did before, and I never expected it from them. And then, you know, the last decade I was going through my journey too. And so a lot of that was talking about stuff and having people, you know, look at you funny, but then eventually come to accept and then ask more questions and become curious. And I do feel that we're going through this collective awakening right now. And I feel a lot of stuff that's been happening, the painful stuff, is the pressure. That's the catalyst that pushes us into our truth, into ourselves. Because, I mean, for me, it's, you know, it was pain that caused me to be like, hey, okay, what's going on? How do I find freedom? What I'm doing is not working. Let's find another way. And so that stuff is the pressure. It's the feedback system of saying, hey, something's not aligned here. Try another way. And as that pressure increases, things move faster and people start waking up. And everyone who does wake up, it feeds into that collective consciousness and makes it easier for the next person. So, you know, when Buddha woke up ages ago, it was a lot harder than it is now, because so many people have been working on this consciousness over time.
Did you have a friend who kind of really planted a seed in your mind about all this, or was it natural curiosity that led you down this path? What sparked it?
It was pain, honestly. Like, I was watching documentaries on like animal factory farming, and it's just like, oh, that is really painful to see. And then I read books about it, and I just went into this place that's so hidden in the world that we kind of shut away and don't look at and don't talk about. And I just went full on into it. And it was so painful that I just needed to find an answer. And I was just sitting in a parking lot, and I heard a radio interview about someone talking about their ayahuasca journey. And I was like, what is ayahuasca? And so I Googled it, and then I was on a plane to Peru 2 weeks later.
Wow.
That's what happened. Yeah, I just, every, you know, when you know you're exactly where you need to be and that's exactly what you need, that's how I felt the whole way there.
Wow, yeah. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really fortunate to have found that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like, that's the definition of being called.
Yeah, very called.
Yeah, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when you were a kid, what did you see yourself doing as an adult? What were the dreams and fantasies that, you know, 10-year-old Abby had?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I really just liked being in nature. I was alone a lot, and that was kind of my solace. You know, just, I like to be, and I just like to feel. I've kind of been more of a feeler than I have been a thinker. You know, that's my tendency. I guess I just didn't know what the future held, but I just had this feeling like, oh, I feel like things are not going well for the environment. And I feel like that's the most important thing, but no one's really doing anything about it. That's kind of my feeling growing up.
So you were like thinking big picture even as a kid, like.
Yeah. Yeah. That, yeah, I would be like, well, if time didn't start, but it had to start, what, how did that work?
Yeah, it's funny. I was having a conversation the other day with someone who was talking about the implications of the Biden presidency on the stock market in relation to, now these aren't conversations I normally have, but in relation to the way, you know, the market is going to react to a Biden presidency as opposed to a Trump presidency, and regulations being now reinstated on, you know, big corporations and things like that. And, you know, how people who have a lot of money in the stock market are probably going to have to take their money out of the stock market because, you know, Biden's going to come in and really, you know, put all these restrictions on stuff. And I was like, that is a very interesting way to look at the opposite side of the same coin. Because that coin to me is the other side of it is, oh, we are going to end this free for all on the environment and try to really get back to addressing what I also believe is the most important, you know, cause when it comes to having an environment that we can actually exist in. But so many people out there aren't thinking that way at all. They're just, it's like the thinker thinks, you know, we find what we want to find, right? And it was just kind of like, oh, wow, how in this day and age, I was thinking to myself, how in the year 2020, with everything that's been going on, how can we not be like so hyper aware of the environment and have it be the number one priority. So when people say it's going to be too late and human beings aren't going to be able to fix the problems that we've caused, you normally I'm always like, well, that's too pessimistic. I don't want to believe that. But then I hear people in November of 2020 talking about just very casually about how the environment doesn't need to be focused on. It's all about the stock market. I'm just like, well, holy shit. I mean, I guess, you know, if there's more of those people, we are in trouble to a certain degree. Do you think that in like being in touch with nature and communicating with nature, does there seem to be a real cry for help? Or do you think nature is kind of, I don't want to say ambivalent about it all, because she'll be there long after we're gone. And I'm not so sure she's emotionally invested in the way a human being would be in making sure that we stay around.
Yeah, I think nature does care. Nature is asking for help. I think things like the call from ayahuasca is part of that. There's a lot of pieces to that. What I see it as, nature is calling us back to herself, because it's been a long time, so many years. I mean, from the human perspective, not from nature, but it's been a lot of work to create humans. We're very advanced creatures. And we're a very advanced aspect of nature. And as humanity, we're an aspect of nature becoming aware of itself. And along that journey, there was a divide, and there was the ego got too strong, or out of balance, I should say. And there was this desire to conquer nature, to fight it, and to subdue it. And that created this rift in human consciousness. And a lot of the shamanic cultures around the world were wiped out. And those were the ones that helped to keep the immune system of nature healthy. And part of that involved working through the consciousness that is imbalanced and harmonizing things and balancing things. And then dominant cultures and dominant with perspectives of, we must dominate, we must overtake. And it's just an imbalance of the survival of the fittest energy. It's an imbalance of the forgetting the connection. And nature's looking to recreate that balance by calling us back to herself, calling us back to her. And I absolutely feel that she loves us. I felt that with Mother Ayahuasca, more than I've ever experienced it in my life. Mother Earth loves us unconditionally. She doesn't judge. She doesn't, she is. And she is a part of us. And she's like the mother. She's like a mom, created your body. And, you know, she wants her to come back, wants us to come back. Because we are important. Humans are special. You know, we're not better than any other animal or anything else in this planet, but it's taken a lot of evolution and a lot of tumultuousness to get to this level of awareness where we can have conversations like this, where nature can have conversations like this. And so, like, as we grow up, in when we go through that veil of forgetting as children, we are connected, everything's amazing, we don't really know how to navigate things yet. And then we forget about the amazing parts, and then we forget about our own strength and depth. And then we remember. But as we remember with the awareness we've been through, then there's this powerful evolution that happens. And that's what I feel we're on the cusp of, is this powerful evolution of healing this collective pain, this collective wound of separation and confusion, and reconnecting with Mother Earth, with the awareness that we've created now, with the connectivity we've created through technology, with the creativity, with the way that we can be in this world. Like, we are such powerful beings. How powerful would it be to wake up where we are now? If we have the power to destroy the planet as we know it, we have the power to do a lot of good too. And there's a lot of potential for more and more aspects of nature and reality to wake up through the efforts that we're creating through technology, through spirituality, all coming together for this kind of collective birth, if you will, of the universe becoming conscious of itself. That was a long answer to your question.
No, that's great. It made me think of a lot of things. I love the idea of the potential for good, because, you know, the human mind is, you know, I think about it and it's like the same mind that made the iron lung, right, is the same mind that made the Iron Maiden, which is, you know, when I think about the Iron Maiden as like a death and torture device, it's just like, you know, like the creativity in anger or in wanting to inflict pain it's mind blowing. I don't want to get too gruesome on here, but it's like next level, to where like the remains of the human that was put into the Iron Maiden was to be, you know, it would filter into the river to be eaten by like the fish in the river. So like the person would be completely wiped from the face of the earth, essentially. But at the same time, we make the iron lung, which extends the life of someone by, you know, by who all accounts would, there's no question that they'd be dead otherwise. Or, you know, the artificial limbs or the International Space Station and all this other kind of stuff. And so if the pendulum swings to that side of the good creativity, it is mind blowing to think about what we could do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't even think I can think about what we could do, right? Like, it's like trying to like tell someone like, imagine the unimaginable, right? And it's like, well, how can I do that? Well, it's like, well, just keep trying and then see what happens.
Yeah,
I wonder what this looks like. I mean, like in your mind's eye, like what do you see this looking like when the pendulum does swing back into the side of, you know, of love and positivity and you know, and taking care of.
Yeah, I feel like it looks, you know, aspects of what kind of like what we talked about, where we take the thorn out and we can all enjoy this party that we're having together. It is because so much of what we're doing is coming from that place of pain, that place of fear. So much of this destructive places and the forgetting of the connection. And yeah, it's part of the duality world that we're in. It's part of the light and the dark. And that dark is pushing us into remembering. And to me, being in that place of, I guess you could call it non-duality, I think it would be a world where, you know, consciousness and spirit are kind of an integral part of life. It's reconnected. And we take radical ownership for ourselves. And it's just, it's normalized to live in flow and rhythms with the cycles of life, cycles of nature, cycles of our body, and the exploration of consciousness through, you know, future visioning and, you know, going all over the place with consciousness because it's not bound by space and time the way that matter is. I feel like that would be like normalized too. And telepathy is become standard. And all of these things that are like kind of like being birthed are like, they're kind of like some people talk to you, oh, hey, I don't know, don't think I'm crazy, but this thing and that thing becomes normal. It's okay to talk about that thing again. And, just as, yeah, I mean, I envision it, aspects of it. You know, for me, I had this vision earlier today of, you know, there's that saying, the lion will lie down with the lamb. And it's like, okay, well, what does that mean? And it's, I feel like it's also just connecting in so deeply with the awareness of us, ourselves, of us as being energy, that we can, have an exchange of energy. We can get all the nourishment we need and we can give that back in a way that's a lot gentler than we have been throughout our history. But yeah, I feel like it's probably a lot of different things for a lot of different people. And that's good because everyone has a different purpose to serve.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the different scales individually that people have of, hey, don't think I'm crazy, but can I tell you this?
Mm-hmm.
And what some person might think is like, wow, I really can't tell anybody this. because they're going to think I'm unstable. Like another person would be like, oh, wait, no, that's just Tuesday morning. You know, like that's just a normal, like, you know, and like, so what that person then thinks would be like, oh, can I tell someone, you know, then that does that number get smaller about the people that are available to hear that and be like, oh, that's not crazy at all. What are you talking about? And it's such an individual experience that it's, I've always like been like, well, you just never really know what anybody's thinking because you can't be inside their mind. Right. And I remember as a kid thinking like, oh, wouldn't it be great to be able to like access that? But then you see like, but then you see representations of that in television, movies, fiction, comic books, and things like that. And you see the person who has that ability and they're driven mad by it because they'll walk into a room and they hear everything. Like, I think there was, what was that movie, What Women Want, I think, from like the 90s. Or whatever, starring Mel Gibson, where he suddenly woke up or had this power to hear every woman's thoughts, which of course is the Hollywood way of representing this. Mm-hmm. Wow. But yeah, so it is, that's like the thing that struck me the most. It's like, I think more and more people are no longer feeling trapped by their own worry about what crazy might be. So they're telling more people, right? And I think is that tapping into like people awakening up and the awakening? Does that speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I understand that concern of not being able to function upon waking up. And that happened with Eckhart Tolle. He woke up like overnight and it took him a couple of years to then integrate that and become who he is today. So that can happen really rapidly. And then it is a lot. It's like, wow, reality is so much more than I'm used to perceiving. There's so much depth and layers within that. And then there's also the aspect of, for most people, it doesn't happen overnight. For most people, it is a really gradual process. So awakening is a gradual process, usually where you kind of dip your toe in and you're like, wow, look at all of this. And then you come back out, dip your toe in again, and you come back out. And it's kind of this weaving in and out until you're ready to kind of have your foot in both worlds. And it's kind of like living in two worlds where you live in this material world and you navigate life and you do things. And then there's the aspect of just connecting with the consciousness world, which has many layers and much more than we typically see day to day, but being able to kind of walk that balance between the two of them, and you can receive from the insights of, you know, the world of spirit, and then you can do in the world of matter. But it's an unfolding. It's a gradual unfolding. Some people sign up for it to happen like that, like overnight and as quick as possible. You know, people take the speedboat to enlightenment, and other people, you know, gently paddle there. And there's whatever path is right for you. And, you know, it's as you get there, you're ready to get there because you become bigger, you ground more. And so if it all happens at once too early, it can seem like too much. And so, you know, people who do a lot of psychedelics, you're like, wow, that was a lot. I don't know if I was ready for that. It's like, oh, there's a little glimpse into enlightenment, but you need to do some work to be fully ready for that on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's just overwhelming.
Bigger,
right?
And more aware.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. Exactly.
I guess, you know, being ready to even experience that whole thing is, you know, and how does one ever truly know when they're ready? I remember the kid in my neighborhood, I was trying to learn how to ride a bicycle, and I had training wheels, and this kid thought that I had been using the training wheels too long. The kid who lived up the street, Kevin was his name. And we had a hill on my side yard of my house. And so he's like, I'm gonna teach you how to ride that bike without training wheels. I was like, okay. So he takes the training wheels off. He puts me on the bike at the top of the hill. And he says, you're going down this hill and you're going to learn, and you will be forced to learn how to not need training wheels, or you're going to crash. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And he just pushed me. And so I make it down the hill and then I crash. You know, once I get to the bottom, I crash. And it was, I do remember the exhilaration of making it down and then the pain of crashing. And it was this huge hill. I'm in Ohio 2 months ago, last month. I drive by, every time I'm in Ohio, I drive by this childhood home, right? And I drove by it like three times because I could not believe how small this hill was. There was, it's essentially a non-hill, right? But when I was a kid, this was like a giant, it was like the Grand Canyon. It was like driving off the, you're riding off the Grand Canyon. And it's, I don't know what the point really is other than like, you know, you get forced into the thing when you're not ready for it. You have no choice but to handle it, even though you do crash. And then later you go back and reflect on it and look at it and you realize, oh, it wasn't really that big of a thing. And I think sometimes I can get caught up in like, you know, like, oh, the shock of awakening and of downloading all this new information and like, can a person handle it? And then it's like years later, you go back, as is the case with, I think, every person, every human being alive who's got this inside of them, will go back and look and be like, oh, that's barely a hill. And I just wonder, like, if someone is terrified of taking off the training wheels and being pushed down that hill, I mean, obviously it's got to be a individual choice, right? But do you think that's the case, that like, even though how scared someone might be to go down this path, that within not that long of a time, they will look back and be like, oh, I can't believe I was, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal because I'm just getting back in touch with my true self.
Yeah. I don't know a single person that regrets pursuing freedom. Not one. They all seem much happier now.
Yeah, it does seem like, yeah, no one's ever like, oh man, I wish I was locked away inside myself still.
Yeah. And it's like, and that, you know, the fear is, it's a good thing, good point you bring up, because it does, it is, can be so, a lot of fear. And, you know, that kind of fear is an illusion. There's the biological fear of, hey, don't go down that ravine at night where the forest and the bears are. And then there's there's also the fear that we make up in our minds of, oh, you know, I can't do this because this, this, and this, or whatever it is, the mind trying to keep us safe. And when it's that, it's just, you just have to recognize it, send it love, and keep going. Don't let it be the boss. It can be there, you know, and just recognizing that's likely part of the scared inner child, and it just needs some love and it needs some healing. And that thing that it's scared of is likely, or possibly, the very thing that it needs ultimately.
Yeah. And I just keep coming back in my mind to like, why do we have to forget all this in the first place? You know? And, you know, not that I just want the easy way out on some stuff, but I mean, I do. I mean, I don't know. I'm not afraid to admit that. I mean, I don't know who truly wouldn't, but I'd love to have, you know, enlightenment on a silver platter, right? And so it's just, I guess, and not every question has to have an answer. And I am trying my best to learn how to accept that. But why do we have to forget in the first place, you know?
It's a lot more interesting to evolve when you don't remember who you are. And you're in a place where you don't have the awareness of being an infinite being. How do you respond in that situation? You know? And maybe you didn't respond the way you liked in one lifetime. So the next time you try to do it again.
Oh my God. If I had like a, you know, a do-over, you know, well, how many do-overs does a person need? Right. About, you know, making choices in certain situations that, you know, impact our lives. And I mean, I think everybody's got those moments in their life. But yeah, I guess if you already knew, if you had the teacher's manual to your own life, none of the questions would be interesting.
Yeah, you don't get to go on the journey. If you already know the end of the book, why bother reading it?
God, I hate how true this answer is. oh, gosh. You know, I just wish that wasn't so illuminating. I like, and there's so many different ways for someone to be on this journey, right? I'm curious, because you do teach and you're a healer, and I'm curious on like the expansiveness, the variety of individual paths, because someone might be listening and they're like, well, this all sounds great, but I'm into this. Like, this isn't about enlightenment. I'm into, like, you know, researching cryptids and trying to find out the nature of reality when it comes to like interdimensional portals, or, you know, blah, 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 or the variety is endless, right? Mm-hmm. And I would argue that those people also are on separate but equal paths towards ultimate truth. And, you know, I don't know, some might think that I'm, you know, stretching the connections here, but I mean, that's the job of the human mind, I think, is to make connections where they don't already seem plausible. That just makes life more interesting. But when it comes to like the wide array of paths, and someone's like, well, I'm not so sure I'm on a path. What advice would you give them to, I don't know, just the, it's one thing to like wake up, right? It's another thing to even realize that you're on the path towards waking up, which I guess is kind of enveloped inside waking up. But does this make sense, or am I getting too meta here?
It makes perfect sense. Yeah. Okay. So I see it as, you can call it, you know, I see waking up, I see it like a pyramid. So waking up is the top. And at the bottom, there's a lot of variety in where we start. There's a lot of surface area. You can choose any entry point. And, you know, it's a choose your own adventure. But all paths lead to home. So I believe that it's our fate to inevitably wake up. I feel like it's the fate of consciousness to inevitably become aware of itself. And we're all doing that in our own way, but we're all going to the same place. And so, you know, you can look at it like religion is trying to find the same answers that science is, or sorry, spirituality is trying to find the same answers that science is. You know, we're trying to find the answers to the universe, we're trying to find the answers to why we're here, to how to live and how to expand. And ultimately it kind of converges at the end. And so it doesn't really matter which direction you start from. You do the one that feels good to you. And that's the spice of life. You know, we're all doing our own thing here, and that makes it interesting. And we all get to learn from each other. And you're always on the path. And when you don't feel like you're on your path, that's part of the path. Because part of the path is going through that forgetting, so that when you remember, you've got to go deeper out there. You kind of forget and you go out there deeper. And then you're gathering information. And then as you come back to what may feel good, might feel aligned, you have more awareness because you've already done all those things that didn't feel good. So that gave you more clarity for who you are now. And it helps you, helps the other people who are also doing those things that you did. Like, oh yeah, I went through that path. Let me show you the way out.
Yeah, that's true. And it's interesting when you say consciousness becoming aware of itself, because I feel like the first step is, you know, consciousness becoming aware of the physical self. So like we're aware of our physical self in this world now. I think everybody would agree with that. And so it seems like it's so obvious that the next step is consciousness becoming aware of consciousness itself in the universe, right? And then understanding the connection to it. Wow, that's really cool to think of it that way. I've never thought of it that way. It does seem like the next step in the evolution of consciousness. I mean, sometimes I wonder if consciousness was just a gift, you know, given to the human animal at some point. I don't know. There is something cool about the evolution of the powerful infinite being that human beings are too, that I enjoy. It just seems so wild to me that at least seemingly we're the only creatures that have this variety of it that we're interacting with in our habitat. Because I do believe that all these animals have consciousness. And, you know, you can feel their pain. They can feel our pain. That is scientifically proven. And anyone who's ever had a dog or a cat or any kind of loving pet or had a connection to an animal, they'll tell you you're insane to try to deny something like that, right? They'll be like, I don't know. They're like, are you a robot from space? Because how could you deny this truth? So it's when consciousness becomes aware of itself and we reach that part, you know, from all these different paths that lead to home, it leads me into the imagining the unimaginable that we spoke about. Like, I'm not even sure I know what that looks like. And probably that's a good thing. In the essence that it's like such a next level amazing thing that I just don't have anything to compare it to, right? And you spoke of spirituality and accidentally said religion at first, and it also made me think like, oh, spirituality is looking for answers. Religion is giving you answers, telling you what the answer already is. And that seems to be the fundamental difference between the two. And it wasn't really until you said that.
Yeah, well said. That's a good way of describing it. Yeah.
Do you think ultimately that science and spirituality are, you know, helping each other, even if at times they really seem at odds? It sounds like that's kind of like the POV you've got.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely helping each other. And I feel like science really started with the physical, and it, you know, it's helping us understand the physical world. And now it's going beyond that into quantum physics. And then it's explaining things that happen in the energetic world. So for example, the concept of, or the phenomenon of quantum entanglement, where two particles can become entangled and behave in the same way, regardless of where they physically are. That's perfect explanation of a distance treatment, a distance session. There's distance Reiki healers, distance, you know, distance consciousness, or you can feel something that happens with someone that you're close to, someone you love, anywhere in the world. And so it's those glimpses that are helping people to open up and realize, oh, that thing that I experienced, okay, it's proven by science. So that's our current religion. That's fine. There's a lot of value in it. It's explaining the phenomenon that we experience through spirituality. And I feel that's supportive because there's also a phenomenon of scientists having the same idea on all different parts of the world at the same time. And, you know, it's all interchange because we are spiritual beings. And so the scientists I see as those who are explaining what they see and who are going deep into understanding through studying consciousness, through studying how, you know, particles behave, whether we're paying attention to it or not. And it's also those, you know, the ones who are going deep into meditative trance states and going deep out into the universe and deep into themselves. Those ones are also experiencing and learning and gathering information. And so it's just the two different angles that are approaching it, but they're all supportive of each other because one explains the next, especially as we start allowing our culture to integrate the concepts of spirituality. And I agree, it is a very personal thing. It shouldn't be told to you, but to allow these concepts of consciousness and our experience with that to become something that we can talk about, and it can be normal and safe to do so.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the big phrases that I was taught coming up in Catholic school was seek and you shall find. And mm-hmm. It seems like scientists and those on spiritual paths are of that ilk. They, you know, that's like a motto. It's the seeker. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say people who get into religion aren't seeking answers as well, because I mean, obviously they are.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and quantum entanglement, that's that, you know, that definitely I think is if I had to put money on something, I would say I would put all my money on quantum entanglement for why you feel it and know it the moment a relative dies, in a moment. And then you find out very shortly after, by either a phone call or someone else, someone lets you know like, oh, so-and-so died, or the next morning you have an email or a phone call from last night, so-and-so died. It's like, well, last night I woke up from a dream and I was like, I lost my aunt. And now you call me and say last night around that same time is when she passed. And I do believe it's quantum entanglement that could be the definite reason for that. And it's really cool to think about.
It is cool to think about. Yeah. I see it as like an explanation for how consciousness moves around. You know, it's not bound by time or space. And so, yeah, we have that freedom to kind of tune in anywhere. And it's just remembering that, realizing we're infinite beings. We can do a lot. And it's just opening up to that. And as we open up to that more and realize that, oh yeah, when someone passes, that's a big shift in energy. It's a lot of emotion. They're moving from the physical world to the immaterial world. That's a lot. And so part of that is we feel that energetically through the cord that we're attached to them with. Because everyone that we're connected to, you can imagine there's a different cord that goes from us to all of that. And the ones that you really love and feel really close with, it's really charged. And so, oh, there's something that happened to that cord. Where did that go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's just really fascinating stuff. And I mean, I think everybody has, at the very least, an experience that's somewhat similar, if not the same, regarding that. And maybe the future is we're no longer looking at gravity as the foundation of science, or the principle of gravity, but it's the principle of consciousness. You know, and maybe consciousness is the thing that's ever present everywhere and is the big blanket that encompasses all things, that therefore are factoring in, you know, factor in consciousness to all your mathematical or scientific equations. I mean, who knows if we ever get to a point like that, but that'd be pretty cool. This has been a lot of fun. And I think it's been illuminating. You've got a very peaceful energy. I think people are enjoying that and feeling that as they listen through. If someone wants to like talk to you directly or like have a session with you or things like that, you're available for those things, right?
Yeah. They can reach me at mindbodyfree.com. And I do kind of intuitive life coaching and I teach intuitive life coaching. And really it's just kind of about remembering yourself, remembering how to connect with reality, the many subtle layers of it, and working with the stuff we've been talking about and creating that world that we all want to live in in our own way.
There's nothing to it but to do it. And it's just one of those things, like if you want, you be the change you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
And exactly. There's never, I mean, because looking out, you know, if someone's plugged into the news constantly or the social media feeds, they'll be overwhelmed and feel like there's no solution. And I know I can't do that. I have to focus on what small things can I do to try to change myself. And I'm part of the world. So, I mean, I guess that is changing the world, but that'd be great. So reach out to Abby let's plug your Instagram as well.
Yeah. It's your mind, body free at your mind, body free.
Yeah. So find her on Instagram, check out the website, and get in touch if you want to set up a session. And this has been great fun.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This has been an engaging conversation. And, you know, and maybe we'll revisit here in the future, you know, down the road and, you know, see what else is going on.
That'd be great. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks so much, Ryan. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, this has been fun. And thanks to everybody for listening. You can go to meandparanormalyou.com. And thanks to the patrons, by the way. Thank you very much. You can check out the video of this interview. We'll see you soon out there, you know, at least virtually. because it doesn't sound like any physical seeings of peoples is going to be happening anytime soon. But in the meantime, we'll all be here digitally, rooting for each other. And I look forward to a future chat with Abby. And until then, we'll see you soon.